Hi, this is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It's Wednesday, April 26th. This is your reading of today's members-only post with members-only audio. Everything for members today. Huberman Schmuberman, a rapidly rising tide of criticism of the bright new star of wellness podcasting. So for the last year, people have been singing the praises of the Huberman Lab podcast to me, and singing. Someone has recommended it in the comments on every other post on the PainSci Facebook page and my Project Try Everything newsletter. It seems like it's become an inevitable mention for anything related to lifestyle medicine or wellness optimization. People love having a source like Huberman to quote-unquote cite. I have listened to some of the podcast, and I was impressed by some of the early episodes. For instance, to this day, I am still making a point of getting outside at sunrise and sunset on the strength of Huberman's apparently evidence-based advice. The guy literally changed my life insofar as I'm actually doing my life in a different way because of things that he said. Not that I've actually noticed a difference in my sleep. I'm doing this largely on faith in the science that he cited and the arguments that he made, faith that is now fading fast, like a sunset. Where it all started to go wrong, and it didn't take long, the microbiome episode was the first to make my eyebrows really scrunch up, along with the blog post, Key Tools to Improve Your Gut Microbiome Health. Oh, sorry, I missed a number there. Six key tools to improve your gut microbiome health. They aren't all wrong, but what's right is rather boring, and what's more exciting is very overstated. And that right there is the template for health optimization hype. Other than just not abusing it, duh, there isn't one science-based way to meaningfully improve your gut or upgrade your microbiome. It cannot be done. We simply don't have the science. The cold exposure episode was the next bucket of cold water. Ha ha. There were a number of issues there, but mostly what I noticed was that it was just way too positive. Excessively, suspiciously positive. But I am less familiar with those topics, so I didn't make too much of it. I just thought, I am now officially concerned about where this is headed. But stretching. Now, that is one of my favorite topics. That's my turf. And I think I would feel comfortable matching my wits about stretching with anyone on Earth. I have spent 20 years studying and writing about stretching. And Huberman's stretching episode was horrifying to me, an absolute deal breaker. It was not entirely nonsense, of course. Again, good hype requires a foundation of the basics, always. But the reek of overstatement was just too intense for my taste. So I won't be tuning in again. I am getting off the Huberman train. Bye-bye. Okay, well, I might ride the Huberman train just so that I can comment on the Huberman train, but I'm not listening for my own sake anymore. No more of that. So what's the problem here? The problem is that there's just not enough good news for an honest show. Science-driven good news about how to care for yourself and solve all kinds of life problems is a terrific, highly marketable premise. But there is an obvious problem with it. It's unsustainable because there is just not enough legitimately good news. I think Huberman quickly worked his way through the low-hanging fruit, and now, so soon, he's charging into false hope territory. And the whole thing feels like a bait and switch to me. Impress people with some legitimately good content and high production values, lots of polish and lots of expert oomph, make it all seem very impressive, and then put a price tag on it and start recommending supplements. And sure enough, the price tag arrived on October 2nd of 2022. For US dollars 100 per year, Huberman Lab Premium Plus. Oh my God, another plus. I swear, one of my greatest entrepreneurial accomplishments is resisting the temptation to call my membership program PainSci Plus. It was right there. I could have done it. I didn't do it. You're welcome. It's not that I object to the paywall in principle. Obviously, I'd have to be quite the hypocrite to be outraged by the selling of content. It's just that I don't think the content is good. I give it a one-star review. I don't believe he's actually helping anyone, or not much, and doing, you know, some harm as part of the package. In my opinion, I do not think it is worth what he's charging. I think he's just selling hope with the authority of science and a premium academic affiliation. Scientism at its finest. History is chock-a-block with grifters like this, especially recent history. Some people are probably true con artists, people who know it's a scam, almost certainly Alex Jones, for instance, probably Paltrow, maybe. But most actually believe in what they sell, and they are dangerous roughly in proportion to their earnestness and their credentials and how effectively they cover their bullshit with science glitter. Beware always of fancy people telling you how to make your body work better with footnotes, especially if they have sponsors. Speaking of which, Huberman isn't just selling subscriptions, because of course he isn't. A quickly rising tide of criticism. Stretching was the topic that got to me, but for Dr. Jonathan Jerry, it was supplements. Why did it have to be supplements? In his April article for the McGill Office for Science and Society, titled "Andrew Huberman Has Supplements on the Brain," Jerry starts by giving Huberman credit where due, as all debunkers must do to be taken seriously. And yet we still always get hate mail from people who don't give us credit for giving credit. Quote, this is a paragraph here. Not a long paragraph, a short paragraph. "Andrew Huberman is indeed really good at explaining what happens to neurotransmitters in the brain and to hormones inside our body when we experience stress, for example. He can boil down complicated neurobiology so that a non-scientist can understand how the human body works. Even though his podcast is firmly rooted in the masculine space of body optimization that has grabbed hold of large swaths of the tech sector, Huberman is a lot less bro-y than his fellow influencers. There's a real gentleness and care to his delivery. The packaging is less aggressive, but the content does not stray far from Silicon Valley's love affair with the tweaking of healthy human biology." And one more little bit from Jonathan here. To Huberman's credit, he does prioritize behavior and dietary changes over the consumption of supplements, and he tells his fans to avoid food and caffeine before bedtime to ensure quality sleep. But it is difficult to sustain a long-form podcast and invite numerous sponsors when your advice is trimmed down to inexpensive common sense. Yeah, Huberman doesn't stick to inexpensive common sense, or his episodes would be over in 5 minutes. Having given credit, Jerry points out the potentially corrupting influence of Huberman's many sponsors, including several of the usual suspects in the wellness and supplements industry, like Athletic Greens, from whom you can get a steady supply of very dubious value for just $80 per month. Eddie points out some of Huberman's slapdash good news interpretations of the science. For instance, according to Huberman, myo-inositol is supported by, quote, an enormous number of studies. But according to Jerry, it is, quote, thin gruel. Huberman's take is standard fare for supplement promotion, where the science is always promising, the body of research always growing. But when someone without a finger in the pie takes a look-see, it's mostly meh. Or seriously? Or worse. Supplements have taken a real beating from the science in the last 20 years, even as they are marketed more successfully than ever. One more short bit from Jonathan's article. "It saddens me to see such a gifted educator promote poorly supported bro science to so many people. But the appeal of the extramural rostrum, where the academic promotes hype and pseudoscience, cannot be denied. Inside the walls of academia, there are guardrails. On a podcast, however, anything goes, and the credibility of academia goes a long way to lend authority to supplement endorsements." More examples of criticism of Huberman's hype. When I first drafted this article last fall, I hadn't heard one single discouraging word about Huberman. I was completely alone. which felt to me like a familiar position. I feel like I've been the, you know, the sole dissenting voice many times in my career, and I'm a little bit proud of that. And here I was again last fall thinking, seriously, about this Huberman guy? I hadn't heard anyone else criticize him. But now, now it's kind of a bonanza. Not everyone is a fan. Here are several examples. Here are six examples. Dr. Michelle Wong tried to find a citation for Huberman's claim that some sunscreens pollute brain neurons. Michelle reports that she did get, quote, about 100 comments across all platforms telling me that I could have just asked him and he'd probably respond, but no actual response from Huberman. Dr. Jen Gunter says, his episode on female hormones was atrocious and featured someone who is heavily into supplements and who counts Northrop as her mentor. Shudder. I can imagine Dr. Gunter was horrified by that because Dr. Christine Northrop is a high-profile flake on the record expressing belief in chakras, astrology, angels, mysticism, feng shui, and tarot cards. And she has earned extensive and harsh criticism for the way she famously pushes woo in the cause of women's health. In other words, she's the perfect opposite of Dr. Gunter. Dr. Asaf Weissman, a neuroscientist like Dr. Huberman, pulls no punches, ever. Asaf does not pull punches. That is not what he does with punches. Quote, he's a BS artist that dumbs down science to the shallowest popular level possible. His neuroscience knowledge is probably the same as any high school student, and his ability to critically appraise studies is embarrassing. Tell us what you really think, Dr. Weissman. This is very much Dr. Weissman's style, and he would probably say the same thing about me. You know, just a fun aside. Matt Strandberg is a sports science specialist and says that Huberman is, quote, someone I personally consider a charlatan. He has some good guests on from time to time and says some valid things here and there, but mostly pseudoscientific infotainment and the cult of scientism masquerading as learning / education. Very articulately put insult there. Next up is Dr. Gideon health nerd Meyerowitz Katz. Quote, this paper on cold immersion recently went viral because it seems to indicate that cold water can improve many facets of human health. Except the paper shows precisely the opposite of that. And the health nerd's excellent tweet thread elaborates on that. Worth a visit. Go to the web version of the post and click on that link if you click on any. That and Dr. Jerry's fine article. Both are probably the most worthwhile external links here. One more special example. This is the last one. Every successful grifter has impressive credentials and affiliations, which is partly why I am not a grifter, let alone a successful one. being perfectly uncredentialed has its benefits. It keeps me from ever succeeding in that horrible way. Huberman is a perfect example of this, though. He is a neuroscientist at Stanford by day, podcaster by night, as Jonathan Jerry put it. But is he actually a neuroscientist by day? I'm sure he is formally, technically. I don't question that. No doubt he still has standing with Stanford, or we would have heard. However, John Vaughn, a PhD student at Stanford, doesn't think so. Quote, Andy has no current lab after abandoning many trainees. His emphasis in caps, many trainees. He never comes in and is a nightmare to get a hold of for teaching neurobio classes. Podcaster by day and night. Tenure. John adds that there's just, quote, one amazing postdoc doing everything solo in the lab. And he shared this image, which of course you can see in the post, in your email or on the web. But it's a simple image to describe. It's just a pair of images. One on the left is captioned Huberman Lab 2018. The one on the right is Huberman Lab 2022. On the left, it's a group of six smiling students with Dr. Huberman. On the right, it's just a series of podcast episode promotional thumbnails implying that the podcast is now all that Huberman is doing. Very interesting. Subscription income is a powerful incentive to tell readers what they want to hear. So I'm going to wrap up the post with a little bit of a confessional and some personal perspective on this. My own two-year-old membership program has already been corrosive to my editorial integrity. Not disastrous, mind you. Consider how unpopular this very post might be. But the temptation to pander for the sake of financial security never stops nipping at me, and I have not entirely resisted it. For many years, I had something precious, near-perfect editorial independence. It was part of the point. I did that deliberately. It was by design, and it was one of the greatest strengths of my content. I was not beholden to anyone, but especially to advertisers or to a profession. And tribal professional affiliations can be very strong. Of course, I had some cranky customers that I tried to be polite to, but I never felt like I needed to bend over backwards to please anyone. I was selling enough books that I could just do my thing. Bliss. But then book sales plunged in 2020 for unclear reasons, but you know, I don't know, something to do with Google. And so I had to pivot to selling subscriptions to loyal fans. That's you. I'm talking about you, because this audio only goes to paying members. And something not great happened. Almost immediately, I started to worry about what my paying subscribers, you, would think of what I wrote. I can't annoy my members. They, you pay my friggin' rent. So of course I started to worry about what you would think of what I wrote. Even worse, I started to worry about what potential subscribers would think. I no longer felt free to just tell the truth as I saw it. Not completely free. I'm doing it here right now. I'm telling you the truth as I see it right now, and it might not be the most popular truth, so I'm still doing it. But I have definitely been walking on editorial eggshells, minimizing the negative, accentuating the positive wherever I possibly can, and starting to avoid dangerous topics like this one. It was clear that I had almost immediately started to play it safe for the first time in my writing career. I was tuning my message for its acceptability to a broad audience. And that is not bliss. It isn't all bad, of course. I probably needed some of my curmudgeonly edges ground down. Interacting with customers on social media has resulted in a huge upgrade to my ability to apply the principle of charity. I keep it classy better than I ever did before, and that's just a good thing. That is actually a good thing. It's made me more careful and more sensible, and I feel more grown up, honestly. The principle of charity is good for that. But there is a slippery slope from that good stuff to pandering, selling out. There is a fine line between playing it safe and just getting into the business of telling people what they want to hear, as long as I can make it sound even a little bit evidence-based, and that would be so easy. It seems like Huberman might have rocketed down that slippery slope in less than a year. Unless he actually started at the bottom and I just wasn't cynical enough to see it, which does happen, believe it or not. As cynical as I am fairly regularly reminded that I need to be even more cynical. I keep coming across such examples conceivable to me. How successful, profitable would Dr. Huberman's podcast be with 80% less good news? What if he only offered advice that can actually be supported with good evidence? How would his idealistic-sounding project be going if he replaced the too-good-to-be-true content with substantive critical analysis of the copious bullshit on the same topics? You know, like I try to do. Thanks for listening. That's the post. I'll talk to you next time.